Bio and staff of the OISD. The purpose of today's meeting is to deal with the allegations of maladministration in the Office of the Public Protector. Hopefully when we're done with that, we can have a look at the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill tomorrow. Okay, I'm advised that's tomorrow. My apologies. Okay, fair enough. We did receive a document. Oh, firstly, we have apologies from Mr. Steve Swartz and Ms. Sheila Stolle. I didn't hear that. Okay. Okay. Mr. Jeffrey?
Just going to put your point of view.
Yes.
We had a one stage in this committee, we had a long debate about minutes. Now, may I ask where the minutes are from the meeting we had with the Deputy Protector?
Yes, they
look, I mean, obviously there are no minutes, but I think that's a problem. And I don't understand it in terms of we've had, that was last term. We had a workshop week before last. We raised issues relating to administration, but things don't seem to be changing. You know, we complained, I remember complaining specifically around the Z-list. But yet this meeting goes on to the Z-list on Friday. I haven't seen yesterday or today's Z list, but I understand that yesterday's at least. There were no, there's no reference to the public hearing next week. And, you know, we had a workshop. Can we not see the minutes of the decisions from the workshop? Because, Chair, my understanding is as members, we are meant to be given administrative support by the committee section. Aside from agendas, I don't see much. And I think it's a problem and it is affecting the way we're able to do the work, our work. And in this meeting, it would have been useful to have looked at what we looked at the minutes from the last meeting, because that will help us in terms of the way forward. So, Chair, I'd want to suggest maybe that you meet with the two committee secretaries and the senior people in the committee section and discuss what the problem is around us not getting the support that we need and I think we are entitled to.
Yes, I'd like to support that, Mr. Chair. I raised this issue long, long ago, before we even raised it again last week, and we still haven't had minutes since. I have been on this committee since 2010, and we cannot operate like that. And I would support Mr. Jeffrey in this.
Chairperson, I thought that the workshop was a time for all confessions, and the staff raised also concerns and things like that, and I thought, since this matter is raised, you should be the one telling us now why there's simply no minutes.
Well, there are no minutes because they haven't been drafted yet. Yeah.
I think, Chair, following on from, may we know why? I mean, if you remember, we had this long debate around minutes in detail and just minuting decisions. I, as Chair, you would remember, in the interests of the work pressures on the committee's secretaries had suggested we just minute decision. But we've got nothing. Why?
Let me just say that we have minutes available, but I'm just trying to check if I have the minutes of that particular meeting right here. But minutes are drafted regularly. The issue is that we don't adopt the minutes of the committee. And if I remember correctly, last week we had a meeting with the chairperson, and we agreed that, you know, that has to be rectified. We have to adopt our minutes regularly.
I'm not sure what the purpose of the long discussion we had, and I remember it's quite a long discussion, over minutes. If, you know, was it an academic discussion? And then, I mean, surely anyone thinking about this meeting, we would want to have the minutes in this meeting of the meeting that we had with the then Deputy Public Protector. So I don't think one can say too much more, but I think I think the support is extremely problematic, the lack of it.
Can we proceed without those bills? I think you've got it. Yes, it's true.
I don't think we have too much choice today, but can I propose that we agree now on when we expect minutes from meetings? And I would suggest that no later than 2 weeks after meetings, we should be approving the minutes of the previous. Well, preferably not, but, I mean, if it's such an issue. I would say the next week, but if that's not possible, then at least two. Otherwise, we forget what we even discussed.
Chair, we've got two committee secretaries now. Yeah. I think the minutes should be the next day. I mean, that's why I think they should be short. The next meeting. That's why they should be short. I really don't understand with the workshop where, you know, members had to be in training the whole of last week. I'm not sure whether the committee section was also being trained. But assuming that they were not, then I don't know why they couldn't have worked on the minutes.
Sure.
Like in the minutes available the next day might be a problem. Because if we're going to meet now until 1, then the minutes are drafted, sent to the content advisor for editing, also sent to the manager. So I don't know if that would be possible. But then I think what we have as a rule in the section is that they must be available within 3 days, and I think that's what we've always tried to do.
Chair, maybe I can see the content advisor because the content advisor sits in the meeting. Why are the minutes sent to the manager for approval? What is the manager going to? I can just see an unnecessary delay on the part of somebody who doesn't interact with the committee at all. And maybe that's something you could iron out with the committee section.
Did I hear you well when you say the minutes will be available in the next week? Why not next sitting on the same subject? Yes. Instead of next week, the next time we sit on the same matter, the minutes must be available.
I think members want to read the minutes ahead of the meeting.
Yeah.
Or the purpose of the next week is that?
Yes.
Okay, hoping that in the next week we will not be sitting.
Exactly. So there will have to be some coordination.
Because that's where I actually felt there could be a gap.
But Chair, you know, the reason why I wanted shorter minutes is that they then should not take too long to draft. That the Secretary should not try and capture what everybody said, because it's just going to take too long and there'll be disputes around, you know, was that properly captured. The minutes are limited to either issues raised, not necessarily by who, and decisions. So there should be something that could be produced in an hour, even after a 3-hour meeting. I really don't see why. I think it is that they are at the next meeting, or before if possible, and if we are having a series of meetings on a bill, there should be some form of minutes the next day that can guide us, that even if it's a single page of these are the sections that were looked at and so on.
Mr. Lani Madaki's suggestion should be incorporated in that. I think she's concerned about having meetings before the following week. So if we have a meeting today on the public protector and then we meet again tomorrow or the next day, then we want those minutes by then. So could we maybe agree that it's the next week or earlier if the matter is being discussed before a week?
Since then, we've received something from the Office of the Institute Supporting Democracy that is here in Parliament. I trust all of you have the document in front of you. And I'm not sure whether you've read the document.
And if so, whether you'd want Advocate Chwayo and her support team to address us on the document, or whether you want some more time to go through the document and proceed from there, Mrs. Schaefer?
Certainly the response from the Public Protector is what we've had already in the documentation for our previous meeting, and her responses there deal with a number of issues that were raised by the deputy. My view is that we need to identify what issues are still of concern to us and get the Public Protector herself to come and answer those issues. I think we all agreed last time around that many of the issues were interpersonal and staff kind of issues relating to how she runs the office, and I don't think that's our role to get involved in those kind of issues. But there were a few issues that we were concerned about, one of which was the signature and the court case that had been apparently laid there of fraud, and we wanted to find out those issues. So I would suggest that we identify what issues we want addressed by the Public Protector herself, that she comes to answer us at a meeting to be agreed on, and that we ask her to come prepared to answer those questions.
I think that is a good proposal. And maybe just to start on it, to my mind, from the interaction with the then deputy, the issue of the this fraud allegation involving the CEO, there were questions that needed to be answered in terms of the police case. It's something we could hear that from the Public Protector herself, or we presumably could get information from the police, because it's an investigation that they are doing. And so I think rather let's hear a police report. It could be a written one. I think with the Public Protector herself, she referred the matter, and I think it would be appropriate that she's given the opportunity to come and address us. I think it is useful then. I mean, there is a fairly detailed in the matters that Advocate Tejwayo has sent. There's a detailed response on the issues. I'm particularly, though, interested in, I mean, there seems to be a fault line less related to personalities and more sort of organizational fault line, and that is the relationship between the public protector, whoever that is, and the deputy public protector, whoever that is, and the CEO, whoever that is. And I, for example, would want to see, and this is something then the public protector would be able to answer, the delegation of powers, responsibilities, and assigned duties that the public protector is assigned to the deputy. I think it's important we see that. We have a copy of what was assigned to Advocate Chai. Presumably there would be something... I mean, it has to be done, presumably it has been done. We would need to hear from the public protector what she has assigned to the deputy. And I think it would also be useful to get information relating to the functions of the CEO. I think his contract we have been given, but just to preempt any problems. Between the CEO and the public protector and the deputy public protector. So I think those issues particularly. Then, the difficulty with this whole thing has been the slew of anonymous complaints. And the question I'm interested in is how can that be avoided? What are the complaint mechanisms within the public protector's office? If a member of staff feels aggrieved, how does the thing work? There was this good governance committee that the deputy chaired, which doesn't seem to have been particularly effective in dealing with the problems or preventing the problems. But we want to have a situation where if people within the staff of the public protector feel unhappy about something, they are able to raise it internally without having to run outside the whole time. I don't know if anybody's added up the number of anonymous complaints that have been, but there are too many. It clearly shows us the problem of people not being able to raise things internally.
And she should respond.
And I think if she can, that is something that maybe she should be informed that's a concern of the committee. And what is she doing to ensure that matters can be dealt with internally? The other aspect maybe would be, can the Public Service Commissioner, I don't think there's particularly much appetite from members of this committee to investigate these matters. Would the Public Service Commission have a role? Is that something we should explore? I mean, this is a Chapter 9. A number of the Chapter 9s have run into difficulties at various times. The Gender Commission had, and I think there was some kind of investigation. But we also need to look at if there are problems raised within a Chapter 9, what is the appropriate body? And would the Public Service Commission have any role to play in terms of investigation when needed? And that's maybe something that we could also explore with the Public Service Commission. But it's just that, we are not going to be, no matter how bad the allegations were, I doubt if we would have been appropriate to have sat down with staff and interviewed aggrieved staff members and got responses and things like that. So if not us, then who? And that's why I was thinking maybe the Public Service Commission has a role. And if that is agreed, it may be useful hearing the Public Service Commission's views on it. And then obviously also the public protector herself can respond on that.
Just on this exact point, Chen, I think I may have been the person who first raised that. Possibility of using the Public Service Commission, because we don't want to and should not be charged with all the minutiae of people's interpersonal difficulties. But I've been thinking about it, and I think there is a problem, but maybe this is maybe the way out of it. The Public Service Commission looks after the public sector. Now, the Chapter 9s are not the public sector. They're emphatically not. They are, to quote the Constitutional Court in one of the judgments, outside government. All right. However, some of its employees are, of course, certainly members of the PSA. But so there is a difficulty there, and I just think it's we are the persons to whom they account. I can't see that we could ask the PSC to assist them when the PSC deals with public service. But it occurred to me that we might discuss this with the public protector. Well, now, what if the public protector, or another Chapter 9, finds that it has difficulties with staff who are also public servants? And if that person then, if Advocate Madonsela herself, asks the Public Service Commission to come and have a look, because I think the PSC does do this sort of thing. Because I do not think we can deploy, we can ask the PSC to go and do it, but we can urge the public protector to invite them in. And that seems to me a way out, because I don't know who else, there is nobody else. The Chapter 9s are unique.
Essentially, before I recognize Ms. Kurani Machaka, this is an anomaly that we've identified.
Yeah.
And we need to find a way of addressing
it.
Well,
it all stops with us, but the problem is we don't want to do this stuff.
Well, it's not that we don't want to. Do we have the capacity?
Yeah.
Immediately, do we have the capacity?
Yeah,
no, we don't.
Yeah.
All right, Ms. Kurani Machaka.
Thank you, Chair. I'm thinking that indeed we don't have the capacity as a committee to actually work on this matter on our own. But at the same time, we have the fact that it's an anonymous complaint. When you look at the seriousness of some of these allegations, you realize that for us to actually manage to have closures, there is need for some kind of investigation. And of course, if you look at some of these allegations, when you browse through the documents, some of them are pure HR matters. Goes to reporting the man and his staff is hired. It goes to performance management. It goes to the fact that staff do not have enough training, no operational plans that actually borders on Public Finance and Management Act and Treasury regulations. And then also, when you look at wasteful expenditure in relation to some of the most expensive equipment that has been bought that's not being utilized, that would actually classify under the Public Finance and Management Act. So I'm thinking it would actually probably require the Public Service Commission and the Auditor General to actually look into the matter and then give us a report. But at the same time, because we have given Advocate Shai an opportunity, the previous Deputy Public Protector, an opportunity to come and present before us, I think we will still maybe need to just have the public protector to come and present before us, before this step can be taken.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, there were, I agree with Ms. Pilani Majake on the Auditor General. I was also going to suggest that there are a number of allegations of non-compliance with the PFMA, and also there are allegations regarding inflated tenders and so on, and the allocation of tenders. Now, that I would like to see investigated by the Auditor General if possible. There's another issue that is of concern. The case management system wasted ₹10 million. I mean, she has answered that. She said it was procured under the previous public protector. But I would like to know what progress has been made. She says it has been reported to the AG already, and she's taken a number of steps regarding it. But I would like to know what the current status of that is. Consultants also, appointment of consultants is also another issue I would like raised with the AG if possible. And then I would like to also hear her response again. She has answered it, but I would like it again before Parliament on the Midvale allegations that she supposedly withheld a report from... I would like to hear what she's got to say again. As well as the allegations, there's also mention of allegations that... public protector in Kimberley has received bribes from the DA to fast track cases, and I would like to hear more about it.
With her is the fact that she goes beyond her jurisdiction. clearly in taking certain cases. If you remember, she cited the Department of Justice as the very main culprit, as being the institution that represented her greatest caseload. And when we asked for the breakdown of what these things were, they were shockingly out of jurisdiction. She has been looking at applications for appeal not heard, I think even judgments delayed. There were matters that rightly belonged with the master that she had intruded upon. And there were, I was really, really worried once we saw the list. So we need to go through that with her, because, and there's only we who can do it. She can't take on cases beyond jurisdiction.
And then our engagement,
honourable members, with the Public Service Commission, should we put that, this is a firm decision now, put that in a letter to them, just inform them that there will be those occasions when we'll require their assistance. Am I correct? Okay. No, Mr. Jeffrey?
Look, I think it may be useful to hear from them whether they think they would be able to perform these tasks. So rather than happily assigning stuff to them, we engage with them over if we have these issues that come up, what capacity would they have? I'm not sure if I understood Ms. Smuts correctly, but where she was saying that the public protector can refer matters to the Public Service Commission, and that it should be the public protector, not us. In this case, this public protector has asked Parliament to deal with the matters.
Mm.
But you may have a case where you have a public protector who there's a whole lot of anonymous complaints and they don't want anyone to deal with it. They want to keep it under the carpet. So I would have thought that I'm not sure if that's what Ms. Mutz intended, but that the National Assembly should, provided that the Public Service Commission feels it can undertake those tasks, that the National Assembly should be able to request them to investigate the matter, whether or not the public protector agrees.
No, that's exactly my difficulty, that I don't think that the Public Service Commission, which by definition deals with the public sector, is actually an appropriate body to deal with a Chapter 9, which I quoted to you from, I think, Langeberg Municipality versus, they are outside government. Therefore, you can't, in fact, send in the troops that deal with the public servants. I don't think we can. We or the National Assembly should do it.
But then, Chair, let's hear from the Public Service Commission. I think if you emphasise the point, let's hear from the Public Service Commission their views on their capacity and their role. Because the difficulty, I agree, the Chapter 9s are outside the public service. It is the Public Service Commission by definition. So, but maybe they can do more if they are requested. Let's hear from them what their views are, and we need to engage with them.
And their employees do appear to be public servants now, but that might give them off track.
I thought they weren't, because everybody, there's a whole pay disparity in the Chapter 9.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but if you're wrong, you're in our position with them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Chair, in fact, this is what happens almost throughout the Chapter 9 institutions. And the other institutions that now form part of the institutions supporting democracy. The staff within those institutions are treated as public servants. And over and above that, they are functioning, especially in relation to the finances, are governed in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And therefore, it tells you that the institutions that are normally given the responsibility to be investigating issues that relate to those matters, then those institutions would also, in this case, be competent to handle them. But I think I do agree with the proposal from Mr. John Jeffrey, that is writing a letter to the Public Service Commission, checking whether it would be within their jurisdiction, to investigate this matter, and whether they would welcome such an opportunity in terms of their capacity and the like. And I think the Auditor General goes throughout. So if the Auditor General is required to do this, the Auditor General would necessarily do it. Thank you, Chair.
Let me just note that I'm a little uncomfortable. We should be making that judgment, but I don't object. Let's write to the PSC and think, who's the chairman of the PSC now? It's really we who should be doing the judgment call, but it does no harm. Let's write to them. For all we know, there might have been previous instances. I do not, with respect, think it follows that because the financial aspects do indeed fall under the PMFA, they also, all of them, report to SCOPA. I don't think it follows from that that the Public Service Commission, that doesn't make them part of the public service.
All right, let me just, I'm quoting from the Act. Section 3 deals with staff, the public protector. Public protector shall, subject to his or her directions and control in the performance of his or her functions, under this Act and the Constitution, be assisted by A, deputy public protector, B, a suitably qualified and experienced person as chief administrative officer appointed by the public protector, or seconded in terms of subsection 12, for the purpose of assisting the public protector in the performance of all financial, administrative, and clerical functions pertaining to the office. Such staff, seconded in terms of subsection 12, or appointed by the public protector as may be necessary to enable the public protector to perform his or her functions. Subsection 12 then says, the public protector may, in the performance of the functions contemplated in subsection 1b, at his or her request, be assisted by officers in the public service, and public services in capitals, seconded to the service of the public protector in terms of any law regulating such secondment.
Maybe there's an entree there. Maybe there's a distinction that may be drawn.
The fact that they distinguish between staff appointed directly by the public protector versus staff that can be seconded from the public service implies that they are not staff of the public service if they are appointed by the public protector.
And those seconded?
So they can be seconded from the public service. So they clearly contemplate in the Act a distinction between the two.
Once they're seconded, they fall outside the public service?
Yes, but how does that take us any further? That's what I understood. But that's why I said perhaps the fact that some of them are
public servants creates then the scope for the PSC to deal at least with some aspects. Yeah, but it's also, a thin edge of the wedge too. But let's consult with the PSC.
All right, I'll do that. And then you said we must refer to the Auditor General's office allegations of contravention in terms of the PFMA as set out in that document from the OISD. And finally, you asked the public protector herself to address the following issues. Office in Kimberley has alleged to be very, very soft on the democratic
I'm
quoting from Mr. Schaefer. Bribing them. Wow, that's worse. All right, fine. To the question of the appointment of consultants and how that was done, you're going to ask her to readdress us on the question of the Mid-Vaal investigation. Four, the whole question of the case management system and how that's not working. And then finally, matters of her jurisdiction or the jurisdiction of the office. trust that I've covered everything adequately. Yes, I've covered that. Yes. Anything else? If we are now done with allegations of maladministration in the Office of the Public Protector, can we move on to perhaps other matters at the time at our disposal? You've all received a copy of the letter from the lawyers representing magistrates. Are you in a position to address me on that? You're all very quiet. Why are you picking on John? Mr. Jeffrey.
Look, I think the issue, I think we had the matter referred to us by the speaker. That was of the magistrate salary increase. That has to be approved by both houses. Our NCOP counterparts and the NCOP as a whole did not want to approve the increase and requested that it go back to the commission. I think we then felt, well, because it clearly can't go anywhere if both houses haven't approved and one house has disapproved, there's no point in us doing anything. But I have heard the issue has been raised that it is that we should have expressed a view on the matter. So that's maybe something that we need to formally do and report to the House. And even if the report is, well, we're not really expressing a view, but some kind of report to the House, we're not really expressing a view, but we note the NCOP has disapproved, so we're not applying our mind further, or we can say something more explicit. The difficulty is that, you know, the in terms of the setup, the arrangement, you know, it was to protect the magistrates. They were public servants. They had their salaries determined by the Minister of Justice. In order to give them greater protection, they were put under the commission, which makes recommendations that everybody then acts on. And that's an independent commission, and now they're unhappy. So it's a little bit of a difficulty. But I think we should have it on the agenda and be able to report back to the House.
But what else are you going to say with respect? I mean, it seems like a route of least resistance and sensible, but what are you going to say in there? Are we therefore not going to address the points the magistrates make? It is their view that the independent remuneration crowd didn't do what it was supposed to do.
Look, I think, Chair, we should hear. I don't know why she's, first of all, wanted me to speak. Now she's sort of but I think we said before that we should hear from them, and so I think that should be scheduled, that they must come. I've heard the allegation made that there are prosecutors earning more than magistrates. Now, I don't know if that is accurate, but the department can give us those figures. But yeah, let them come. So I think we should do some report back to the House on the report, and we should also call in the different magistrates' organisations, these people writing the letters to us or to the Speaker or whatever, hear their issues, and then get the department to respond. I don't think we should cross-examine the Commission for Remuneration's decisions, but we should at least maybe get some insight into the process that they followed, and even invite the chair. It's not, I mean, Judge Soretti recuses himself from the deliberations on judicial offices, so it's somebody else who chairs that.
And Chair, what about the timeline? Is half the difficulty not that they say if the President doesn't do something one way or the other, they can't get their retrospective salaries?
That's what concerns me.
That's the whole problem.
Let me hear Mrs. Schaefer, please. Can switch your mic off, please, sir.
Chair, in future, I'm going to just talk. My concern is the timeline. They're alleging if we don't make the decision, they can't get their remuneration, but still have to go to the President for approval. They're saying we have to either approve or disapprove. I'm not sure, and I would like clarification as to whether if we do disapprove it on the grounds that they don't want it, they say it's not sufficient, does the President then have discretion to increase it unilaterally or not? Because the Act says, according to the elector, determined by the President after taking into account the recommendations of the Commission and approved by Parliament. So it implies that it's not approved by Parliament, then he can't actually make the decision. Now, it's not approved by Parliament, and the magistrates didn't want us to approve it. Now, you know, maybe we've been talking since last year already about getting magistrates to come and talk to us. And it's now really becoming a problematic issue as far as time is concerned. I mean, it's actually very urgent. And if we say no, we don't approve it, it doesn't seem that the President can, and then it's not going to help them anyway. They can't get their retrospective allowance. The other option is I don't know if the NCFT can reconsider or not, but I think, as far as I understand, they also said no on the basis that the magistrates said they weren't happy. Now, if we're going to make a recommendation and say no, then I agree with Ms. Matthew. We must say we are not approving it because the magistrates have concerns with it and allege that the IRB hasn't done their work properly and hasn't adequately considered their comments. Then it's up to the President what he does with it. But it still isn't going to help the magistrates, who are going to sit now for another year without an increase.
Isn't it the case that the magistrates want the determination to go back to the
Commission?
And all of this they want to happen before April, and then to come back, obviously, to the two houses and to the President. So, I mean, I'm not sure it assists at all if we say, yeah, well, no, fine, we will listen to the magistrates 2 or 3 weeks hence. It actually doesn't help at all. From the magistrates' point of view, they just want us to say nay, precisely as Mr. Jeffrey sketched, and which I think is the easiest course. It's just not clear to me what are we going to say. We're saying nay, why? Because we also believe that the IRB didn't apply its mind?
We can say we don't have the data there.
All right. Okay, let's do that then. But put the damn thing through, because otherwise it's all completely self-defeating. Because the point is to check that position to get the IRB to deliberate all over again.
Is that what we intend doing? Getting the IRB to deliberate again?
That's what the magistrate...
Are they in a position? Do we do that as people who...
It'll be the effect of what we do. It'll be the effect. It's not that we say so.
Yeah.
So perhaps we should get them to come in very urgently and address us and say, do they want us to say no or not?
Well, I think
they've made that clear. Well, I'm not so sure now, given the latest lawyer's letter, because you know, now they're saying, well, they won't get any increase at all. Now, I mean, that's going to be the effect if the IRB doesn't get together before the time and make another recommendation.
We want to immediately emphasize that it's not our intention to challenge the view of the ICR with regard to the percentage salary. It is, however, our contention that in making this recommendation, it does not comply with the provision.
Yeah.
I don't know. Readjustment of the whole package. They don't mind the percentage, but they're saying their whole package should be reassessed.
Still don't know what
you're saying. So let's get the magistrates to come in. Then we can make a decision after we've actually engaged them. And to also go back also to the judgment. That relates to the matter that they took to the High Court.
I'm not sure if that this has happened before. The whole purpose of having an independent commission does it mean now that everyone affected by the decisions can challenge this. Is that what it means?
That's procedure, I presume. You can always challenge
procedure.
Procedure.
Oh.
If that is what you're thinking.
We don't have time next week.
No time next week.
We've got the hearings and then the legal practice and then we've got the
But look, Chair, I mean, we make the laws, so presumably we can, I'm not sure whether it's required to think they can't get their salary, it's not paid, the increase is not paid by the period of time. You know, presumably we can see if there's any remedy for that.
Or I've got a much better idea. Why don't we ask our Magistrates Commission representative, Ms. Schaefer and Mr. Steve Swart, who is judiciously absent today, to interact with the magistrates and come and report to us.
I don't think that would be fair.
No, I think we need to hear from them. I mean, I'm interested in, do they want to remain under the Commission or do they want to go back to being public servants?
Do they have a choice?
No, they don't have a choice.
Sorry?
Do they have a choice?
Independent judiciary.
Well, they might want us to look at options.
And we're going to give them that?
No, I don't know. But they, you know, they seem to be a little bit unclear. I mean, remember that magistrate who was represented by a shop steward from Nihal in his disciplinary case?
Yeah.
Because the difficulty is that, you know, whenever they engage with us, or yeah, I know anything about that. One thing may be that we're under time pressure is the Commission recommended a percentage increase for everybody across the board. Everybody else, whether they be traditional leaders, local government councillors, members of parliament, or judges, accepted it without complaint. Only the magistrates complained. And because of that, they never got an increase. We then thought, okay, well, if you want to raise issues, you know, that's your affair. Maybe we should look at, because I think it is equitable that magistrates get that inflationary linked increase. It's an inflationary linked increase. Maybe the fairest thing to do, I mean, it's not saying we're not going to hear from them, but we've got our own program. is to consider approving that increase and requesting the NCOP to possibly rescind their decision, and then they get their ordinary increase, and then they can argue later, and maybe next time they should be a little bit more careful about what they're asking for. Because the part of the problem was, is my understanding is they did go to the NCOP and they asked the NCOP not to approve.
Ooh.
Now because the NCOP has not approved it, now they have this problem of they might not get their increase this past year.
All the more reason why we should have them here. What bothers me, you know, that people who fall under the purview of the commission can say, well, we're not happy with your decision. As you say, Mr. Chair, all of us, MPs, judges, traditional leaders, I'm sure that amongst that long list, there are people who are happy with the commission's decision. But, well,
in fairness, it is a long-standing issue that they've been fighting for, and I don't think it's quite as simple as that. It's not like they claim that they haven't, that there's a historical problem regarding their salaries. I can't recall all the details, but it's not simply saying I don't accept it, you know, the percentage. They are just saying that the whole regime needs to be re-looked at.
I think in fairness, let's be upfront and honest. Magistrates want to be regarded as judges, and that's the bottom line. Okay? Now, if they're using this process to fight that particular battle, then they're going about it the wrong way. That's the real issue.
I think the real issue, Che, is they think that the prosecutors are getting more than them. For now.
Yeah, that's factual, correct.
Let them come in and indicate so to us. But that's one of the other reasons they are unhappy.
Is that the consequence of the OSD? Yama doesn't have a long story. Yeah,
let me just wait for the level. Alright, then we obtain an opinion on the implications of the decision of the NCOP from parliamentary
advisors. Okay. Sorry, what decision, Chair, are we obtaining on that? Because it's basically, for them to get their increase, Parliament has to approve. That means both houses.
If
one of the houses, then they don't get the increase. It can't be published.
But what they're asking you is something completely different.
We don't need that opinion. I think the issue that we should be exploring, considering ourselves, is do we actually grant them the increase? We go to the NCOP to ask, will you rescind?
In the face of their wishes,
yeah.
Which is that we shouldn't agree.
Because I don't think they thought carefully enough around the issue of not wanting the increase approved.
And they brought into the magistrate's request for them to disapprove.
Yeah.
Well, so your opinion, what do you want to ask Frankie and Ms. Adhikari, is essentially what the consequences would be if we followed the magistrate's advice, which is that they want us to not approve of that, and have it sent back to the independent commission.
That's why I suggested we get the magistrates to come and tell us, do they want this or don't they want it? If not, Mr. Chair, maybe you need to have a discussion with your colleague in the NCOP and ask, does he think that they would, maybe raise it informally with colleagues there and ask if they would consider rescinding their decision, if that's what the magistrates want in the meantime. If it's, because it's not going to happen before the time is up, that there's going to be properly reviewed. So there's no point in us approving it if the NCOP says no, they're not going to approve. But if we agree on that course of action, we don't necessarily need the legal opinion.
They created a problem. They went to the NCOP, persuaded them. The NCOP bought into it. And now they are serious implications. All right, I'll go and speak to you. Okay. May I ask you to No, I just don't want him to think that we are bullying him or anything. I have to couch my words very carefully and actually plead with him to change the, as Mr. Gentry said, he nearly sinned. And then we ask the magistrates to come and appear with us. Yeah. Well, if we're done with this, then we'll move on to that. Okay? All right. Okay. Legal practice books?
Chair, there's just two things. We've got the hearings next week. Do we know yet, we're having all these submissions, written submissions, do we know yet who has indicated that they want to present? And can we get some idea this week who it is and when they're coming and things? And the other issue, Chair, was the issue of tagging. Would it be possible that we take a decision? I mean, I think everybody knows the issue is the Department of State Law Advisors felt it was should be dealt with in terms of Section 75 of the Constitution. The Parliamentary Law Advisors and the Joint Tagging Mechanism tagged at Section 76. On the basis that it related to trade. Now, I know the issue is quite complex. Would it be possible for us to seek a legal opinion on the tagging? Because ultimately, if it's incorrectly tagged, it may get referred back by the President, as has happened with the Intellectual Properties Bill. Yeah.
Yes.
And then we have it back again. So could we look at, and I think it would need to be a decision of the committee, seeking a legal opinion, and seeking a legal opinion from a constitutional expert like Advocate Plengrove.
Good, that's right. Good. Agreed.
Support.
I'm raising it because, you know, out of concern that I tried through the normal channels to say, look, we think you've made a mistake. And the response I got was, one, you've missed your deadline, and two, yes. Now, flowing from that, I was advised to speak to the speaker directly, which I did. And I said, look, I really think he's made a mistake. Now, I like Mr. Jeffrey's suggestion that this committee takes a decision, and that decision is put down so that later on, Mr. Jeffrey refers to the presidency, and the fact comes back that they were wrong, and we were right.
Could we include then in our request for an opinion what remedies we would have as a committee before passing the bill to get it retagged, if any?
No.
There aren't any?
No.
Okay.
I think that's why we're asking for an opinion.
No, very good. No, I'm happy to support. I'll second it.
As regards the people who are going to appear before us on the legal practice board, the most obvious are the Law Society and the General Counsel of the Bar. Based on the written submissions we received, will you entrust with me, Ms. Christine, and the draft the short list?
Yeah, but Chair, what I'm interested in knowing is who is asked to make oral submissions. Can we get that circulated to us, and then we can look at the submissions and make submi- and
make suggestions to you around who should be invited that is not requested.
Also, I saw in the newspaper, alongside an appropriately handsome picture of yourself, that we had received 20 submissions, but I don't believe that I have yet received 20. The last ones I got yesterday were the GCB. I haven't seen anything from the LSSA. So clearly, I have not received 20. Now they're coming through briskly.
Ms. Munts has looked at her GCB submission, which is divided into multiple divisions.
Did you count them separately?
No,
he didn't. You say he did not. And yeah. I haven't seen the LSSA yet. No, but keep them coming as long as you're not, I want to receive at the same time as the ANC.
I had thought that by this morning we would have all received a batch. And I thought we had.
But at one university they like with 7 submissions or something in there, because each head of department, like head of department or assistant or made their own submission.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that can't be quite relevant.
They made it genius and
they're
very similar.
Yeah, well, all right, okay.
What
do
you say? One page.
No, there may be a lot of them that are just single pages.
Yes.
But Chair, I think what would be useful is there's lots of copies floating around, an index, an indication of who has indicated they want to make, who's asked to make an oral submission, and then a deadline by which, it would probably have to be like Thursday, where we indicate to you who, in addition, we feel should come.
Okay.
Obviously, I think if somebody's indicated that they want to come, it's difficult to say no. I have my own reservations around people who I feel come and make submissions that repeat what other people have said, but it looks good on their annual report.
All right, no, but we're unlikely shortly to have that the usual suspects. I've seen LRC, and I certainly want to hear that, but I don't know how that would be frivolous. No, they wouldn't dare. Am I too sanguine?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the right thing to do, even for the future, is when you've got so many submissions, to have like a metrics of all the organizations that have submitted and what they want to actually come and present on. Like LRC, I think it focuses much more on lines of appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have too many organizations that want to come and do the same thing, we make them aware. LRC also is interested in this. So by the time they come here, they already have money to interact themselves to potentially try to consolidate.
But one person is going on a certain issue, you precisely want to hear the other,
They could engage, and if they feel they don't actually manage to come up with something that they agree on, then they can come and do it individually.
I disagree fundamentally. The purpose of public submissions is for those people to say what they want to say, and for us. There's no way we can effectively censor before the fact. I'm not going to be 100.
There's only 20.
No, I'm saying if there are 100, the system that I'm suggesting could actually help in the sense that if the NGOs are aware of what other NGOs want to come and present on, then they can simply consolidate. If it's possible, I'm not saying even if it's not possible.
Alright. Can we agree that Thursday is the deadline? For you to come back to me and say we want the following people to come in.
But we need to get the status today.
That's what I was going to say next. That Mr. Romano and your team, we need to ensure that all of them are going to receive what I've received. I got it on my desk this morning, so I assume that all of you got what I got. Yes. Yes, there you are. Mr. Sibanioni is showing, just raise it, Mr. Sibanioni, so everyone can see.
29.
Yes, he received another 9. No, it was 29. Oh.
reminds me. Remember in our media statement, we set today as the deadline. So there may be further submissions before the end of the day. Just bear that in mind, all right? All right. Anything else? NICRA. Yeah. Is that the one about sexual offences?
No.
Oh, that thing with NICRA. Yeah, waiting to our prisoners.
No, it's a terrible problem.
No, I'm happy to assist everyone.
It's a terrible
problem. Oh, hang on, Miss Smuts. I'm so grateful to Debbie. The Deputy Public Protector has written to us requesting condemnation of his membership of some organization, SAQA, South African Qualifications Authority. We need a decision on that matter. Well, I would need Ms. Schaefer to reiterate.
So in terms of the Act, Parliament has to approve the conditions of service of the Deputy Public Protector, and I would say that this would relate to conditions of service, and that we should then agree and recommend to the National Assembly that we have no problem with it, provided that in the event of any conflict he will recuse himself from the matter.
Chair, I don't have a problem with that, but what I do have a problem with is that the Deputy Public Protector writing directly to you. The communication, this might sound bureaucratic, but it's better if procedures are followed. The correct procedure, I mean, he's new, obviously, but the correct procedure is he should write to the Speaker. And so he should do that. I think it also would be useful to get a view from the Public Protector. As well. But let him correctly...
Can we forward the letter to the Speaker?
Yes, forward the letter. But I think he should be told, please readdress this letter to the Speaker. And then also, what are the views of the Public Protector? He can approach her and table something with it.
What we then asked Mr. Bassett, we asked him to check with the other judges.
But I think we've got to finalise the matter. I would have thought we could look at that proposal on the understanding from Mr. Bassett.
Surely
Judge
Newton would have consulted with Mr. Catania and the other.
No, I would think so.
Yes, they were the two who came to see us, yes. And we can assume. And if he says so, he's not trying to say, copy those back.
All right. Anything else on that?
On the harassment, didn't we also say that we would also advise or invite the peace committee as well to come? They might well have, but I mean, it depends also if we're going to have the staff here. You know, if we have the staff here tomorrow, they might well want to be here.
That's all I have to say.